Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Roster Rhetorical, the official MLB Daily Dish podcast. This is episode 18. Is that right, Matt? We fact-checked?
Yes, I just 18. Finished counting.
Okay, good. As always, I am your host, Chris Schubert. Alongside me, as you just heard, was Matt Goldman and Mike Bates. Mike, you just came back from a trip.
I did. I was up in the Twin Cities this weekend. I managed to escape Iowa without being accosted by a politician. And...
That's surprising. You went
Usually I just open my door and yell, yeah. I'm an undecided voter, and like 16 people show up to do my yard work. We went up there for Twins Fest. My son and I went and had a blast. It was a great time. Bought a bunch of old baseball cards, and he got a couple autographs, and interacted with some of the players and played some games and just had a really good time.
So, Mike, I forgot you lived in Iowa. And before before we talk baseball, I want to ask you a political question. Are you voting tomorrow?
I don't have a plan to go to the caucuses tomorrow.
Okay. I just thought I would ask because you're in Iowa and tomorrow's a big day, so I figured I would just...
Voting is incredibly important, but caucuses are stupid.
Okay, fair enough. I don't live in Iowa. I don't caucus, so... If a person from Iowa tells me I'm stupid, I'll just go with them. All right, fine.
That's my own opinion.
All right. You did recently just move there, right? So, I mean...
Yes.
I don't really know how much of your opinion is Iowa in nature. But all right, I'll go with
it. I am glad that after Monday, Iowans can forget about it for a while.
Okay. All right, well, now that the political portion of the show is over, let's talk some baseball. Guys, which trade should we go in chronological order here with this stuff?
Yeah, probably. I think it makes all right,
whatever you want.
Sense.
You're the master of ceremonies.
I am the host, so I do kind of say what goes. All right, let's start with the Rays and Rockies getting together and making a deal, and it was the Rockies finally moving one of their outfielders, trading Corey Dickerson, and a minor league third baseman, Kevin Padlo. And they got back lefty reliever Jake McGee and minor league pitcher, how do you pronounce it? Is it German Marquez or?
Your guess is as good as mine.
All right, we'll go with
probably
German.
Herman
Marquez? Yeah, it's a good point. The Mets had a Herman on their team too, so probably should know that. So the minor league pitcher, Herman Marquez, also goes to Colorado. This was sort of expected that the Rockies would move an outfielder this offseason, especially after they signed Geraldo Parra. But guys, I think what everybody is talking about is the return that they got in exchange for Corey Dickerson. It's not what was probably envisioned. I think easily starting pitching was probably what most people expect them to get back, especially if you look at what their projected depth chart is at starting pitching this year. It doesn't look very good. And it's a sore spot, especially when you're playing Coors. You need to have good pitching if you're going to try to win games. And they got a lefty reliever who... might not make them all that much better. He may save them another game or two, but he's not really going to take them over the top. I think the thing that stands out for me is that McGee is probably going to get moved by July, and that they just moved Dickerson for the best available price now, and they got a tradable asset later on. Is that how you guys felt? Mike, I'll go to you first.
I don't know what the... As usual, I'm really confused by what the Rockies are thinking here. I don't think that they got bad value for Corey Dickerson, who had a lot of injury problems this year, and who, you know, is... there are some questions about his ability to hit away from Coors, although a lot of those splits seem to iron out once you get players away from Denver. Dickerson is under control for until 2020, whereas McGee is under control through the end of 2018. So they gave up 2 years of control to bring in this a good reliever who's roughly the same in value, but he's not the kind of player that a team like the Rockies should be acquiring, because they're bad, and they're going to continue to be bad for at least another 1 to 2 years, at which point, you know, Jake McGee is going to start he's gonna go elsewhere. You know, he's gonna be a great closer for all the 60 games that the Rockies win.
Right, and I think that's the main thing here is he doesn't do much for them in terms of making them a better team this year. On the field wise, he's not going to take them over the top. He's not going to make them a playoff team. Does he make them better? Yeah, in some way, he's going to probably save a couple extra games that their bullpen, you know, wouldn't have saved, especially when you look at who they have on the left-handed side with Boone Logan, Chris Russo. They don't have, you know, a star-studded left-handed reliever that they can go to, and McGee does serve that role. But, you know, you'd make this trade for a star closer when you think that's your only missing piece. And that's just obviously not the case here. And, Matt, tell me if you agree with this or not. This just seems to be another example of the Rockies front office not really committing to a certain direction and just sort of, I don't know, treading water in terms of not being able to make any progress in one way or another. If they fully committed to a rebuild, I think they could probably, you know, compete years down the road, but they're just sort of progressing and putting it off, and it just doesn't seem to be working.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was really nothing they could do outside of spending a bunch of money that they've never been able to do to fix their team this year. And if the plan is to trade Jake McGee, like you said, down the road, then this is a move that, you know, people will be less mad at. But at least for now, just it's so odd to see the Rockies add a reliever. I mean, you guys both said it. Adding one reliever really doesn't change anything about the Rockies' season. You know, they just need as much talent as they can get. So if they do wind up flipping McGee, hopefully they can bring something in. But, you know, with the exchange of Marquez and Padlo, they're both really young. I believe Marquez is 20, about to be 21, and Padlo is 19, about to be 20. And they're both in high A. So it just seems like a really weird prospect swap. And, you know, you can even look back to when the Rockies signed Gerardo Parra. I mean, that was a real head scratcher. If their game or if their goal was to add an outfielder, so that they could eventually shop one of their three, Dickerson, Gonzalez, and Blackman. You know, why not sign someone like Austin Jackson, who's not going to need a 3-year deal for $29 million? Obviously, $29 million isn't going to wreck the Rockies franchise, but it's just one of those moves that in a vacuum, it doesn't seem that weird, but just for what the Rockies need to do and what they've been doing to try and accomplish a rebuilding goal, it seems really odd.
So this... I think what's really, to me, keeps standing out in the decisions that the Rockies make is that so often they seem to be made devoid of context of where the team is and what the team is, where the team needs to go in order to build a contender. And you know, this is a fine move. It's just not a good move for the Rockies.
Right. If let's say the Cardinals or the Mets or the Yankees made this move, those are teams where you're like, oh, this is a great move for this team because they've added a lefty reliever. They gave up, you know, a surplus.
They're trading from depth.
Right. They're trading from depth to maybe add something that they need. But like, for the Rockies, it just feels like it doesn't give them any added benefit. Does it really help them to win an extra 3 games this year or extra 2 games? No, it really doesn't, and that's the perplexing part to me. And this is pure speculation on my part, but would they have gotten more if they traded Carlos Gonzalez?
Oh yeah, I mean.
Yeah, sure. I mean, is that okay? Because when I heard this move, I thought, man, if they would have traded Cargo, they would have gotten more.
I mean, the same would be true about Blackman, at least off the top of my head. I think that would be true.
Yeah, I think so. I'm surprised that Dickerson is the one that... Maybe he was the most easily movable in terms of, you know, money-wise and everything that goes into making a trade happen.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously... Oh, sorry. I just want to say...
No, go ahead.
You know, obviously we can't know what the negotiations were outside of Jeff Breidich or Silverman telling us what the negotiation process was like, but you almost wonder if the Rockies could have just asked for one, like, not elite, but pretty good, great prospect back, sure, rather than McGee, and then the Rays still have their trade chip with McGee. But, you know, barring someone telling us that was shot down or that was never thought about, we can't really play the hypothetical game there.
Right, because, I mean, Marquez was not in their top 30 prospects. So, you know, maybe that's where conversations started for the Rockies, is they asked for one of their top prospects, and this is what they settled on. But it seems interesting that they would go after McGee, and maybe instead of trying to get one of those guys. And you don't have to get, you know, a top five guy, but let's say you get a guy that's 12 or 14 on the list, a guy that has potential in stock that you can stow away for a couple of years. That makes more sense for this Rocky team, at least for me. Mike, did you want to add something?
We're good. Don't worry about it.
Really?
Yeah.
You're always eager to talk. I figured you were going to.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. This show is very NL West themed this week, right? I mean, there's a lot of things
going
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's, sticking with our theme of going in chronological order.
Typical West Coast bias.
Right. Let's move to the Dodgers signing, Howie Kendrick to a 2-year, $20 million deal. And this seemed to make the most sense after we kind of put him as the guy that was going to get, you know, the Stephen Drew treatment and was going to have a tough time going back or going somewhere where a team would have to give up a pick. And it seemed to come together really quickly. We heard that they were talking again, and then I think that either the next day or the same day, you know, they were in agreement on a 2-year deal and he was back there. It gives them depth. Kendrick can play second base. He can go over to third. They have Justin Turner, who's hurt right now. He's dealing with rehab from surgery, I believe. So, you know, he's going to be able to play there. You know, they have Chase Utley. So they've really shored up their infield defense and their infield versatility that should allow them to sustain if any long-term injuries happen. Your guys' thoughts on Kendrick going back to the Dodgers?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, Kendrick is, I think, in decline. And I don't, you know, I do worry about, hold on a second here. I do worry about a potential collapse from Kendrick. But at the same time, you know, I think the Dodgers have a really strong bench now. I think having Kike Hernandez available, having Chase Utley to come off the bench and pinch hit and play a couple times a week against right-handed pitching is potentially really useful for this club. You know, I don't think it's a bad move, provided Kendrick doesn't collapse, but I think there's a pretty good danger of that.
I think there's also some value in another veteran being on that team to mentor Corey Seager. You know, there's no value in terms of numbers on that, but having both Kendrick and Utley there to teach Seager and to help him, you know, because they're going to be double play partners, I think there's value in that. And when you have a young shortstop, a young infielder, it's good to surround him with that veteran leadership that can show him the ropes, especially in LA, where, you know, success really is important. Matt?
You know, even if Kendrick does collapse, I don't really think it matters that much. A 2-year, $20 million deal doesn't matter to the Dodgers, assuming that their pockets are as deep as we still think they are. And, you know, like you said, it gives them a lot of depth. He was worth 2.1 F4 last year, 4.7 the year before that, then mostly 2s the rest of his career. So he's a solid player. I don't really expect him to collapse. I mean, he's never been an amazing hitter or an elite guy. He just kind of seems to be pretty consistent. The injury hurt him a bit this year. And, you know, if anything, obviously we saw it with Stephen Drew and Kendrys Morales a couple years ago, but this is just another example of why the qualifying offer system probably will be, if, I mean, it probably should be gone out of the next CBA. I don't know if I'd bet on it, but it's, I mean, over, time and time again, we've seen it hurt players' value. And, you know, Kendrick not accepting that $15.8 million qualifying offer now looks pretty awful.
It's going to be one of the key issues for the next CBA, right? I mean, that's pretty much a guarantee that they're going to relook at this and try to figure out how to probably tier it a little bit. I think there's a way to create a system for where a guy like Kendrick maybe won't get a first-round pick attached to him, but maybe we'll get like a third-round pick attached to him or something. Look, everyone that's going to be involved in these talks are smart people. They'll figure something out that creates a more balance and helps these players, because this system is supposed to reward teams who lose players to free agency. It's not supposed to punish players for entering free agency. And we've seen since it's happened that it's done that a couple of times.
Yeah, it's absolutely killing baseball's middle and lower middle class. You know, the fact that there was a serious danger that Kendrick might have to, you know, sit out until June or whatever, is, you know, I think there has to be a motivation to get a change somehow, at least from a player perspective.
Yeah, and I think they realize that.
I think teams also understand that to a certain extent. Teams, you know, Howie Kendrick is a perfectly fine player, and teams want to sign him, but they don't want to give up the draft pick compensation for that. Really, right. It's a system where nobody is happy right now.
And I think if instead of a first-round pick, it was a third-round pick attached to him or something that they were able to lesser the hit.
But that's what we had before, right? With
Tier A, Tier B, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
And how do you make that...
Distinction?
Distinction between those guys. I mean, then you had relievers markets getting absolutely decimated.
What if you made it to where the basic qualifying offer was like a 3-year deal and had like a first round pick attached to it, but a 1-year deal had like a 4th round pick attached to it? You do it that way?
That's interesting.
Because there needs to be incentive on both sides, right? There has to be the player can't get screwed out of, you know, being able to play the market, because if in Howie Kendrick's situation, he only had a handful of teams he could negotiate with, and everybody in baseball knew that. You know, and of course, while teams know that the current system sucks, they're still going to gain the system if they can, right? They're still going to know that Kendrick isn't going to, you know, shy away from a potential 1-year, $8 million offer because he knows he might not be able to get that elsewhere. Now, he did end up in this scenario getting $10 million a year, but, you know, it's just there has to be a middle ground, and I guarantee you that it's one of the top issues in the next CBA. Hands down, it has to be. That and probably the schedule, which I think they're going to try to fix. Mark my words. They're going to try to shorten the schedule for the next CBA.
Boy, I
hope
I don't think so.
They're going to try to get it to 156.
No, I mean, it comes up so often, but, I mean, why are the owners going to forfeit 6 games? I mean, that doesn't...
That's because they're going to change the revenue scale, I think. I think they're going to be able to offset that revenue. There's a way to get it to 156 or 158 and still compensate the owners for losing those games. Because they're going to sell it as if you know, the offset in lost revenue for these games might be gained because you don't have to spend money on the disabled, by having money on the disabled list for guys who get hurt for having those less games, you know? It'll be interesting, but I think they're at least going to try. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know. I feel like there's usually only one major issue for each CBA. Obviously, some minor stuff changes that we gloss over, but I think next year the major one's going to be the qualifying offer.
When was the last one? I can't...
It was 2012?
Yeah? Okay.
Not sure.
It felt longer than that, so maybe I just don't remember it going on.
Well, it was so non-contentious.
It was 2012 to 2016.
It was a very easy process, from what I remember, and there just weren't, you know, in baseball's labor history has been so fraught with battles between ownership and players, and it's, you know, they work in tandem so well, or have for the last 20 years since the end of the last strike. Whereas football and basketball and hockey have had a significant amount of labor strife in comparison. You know, I expect that a lot of that will continue, especially because Rob Manfred was one of the guys who helped craft the CBA from the league perspective.
Okay, one last move in the NL West, and then Matt has a story that he wants to close the show with. Matt, you know what I'm talking about, right?
No.
It was the story that you suggested.
before. Oh yes, okay.
Okay, all right. I don't want you to be caught off guard in 5 minutes.
I thought we had some private conversation that I forgot about.
No, okay. All right, last move in the NL West, the Diamondbacks trading Aaron Hill, Chase Anderson, and somebody help me with the pronunciation. Is it?
I believe it's Eason Diaz.
Eason Diaz. Okay. To the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for Gene Segura and reliever Tyler Wagner. This move from the Diamondbacks' perspective has been a long time coming. They've been trying to move a second baseman. Aaron Hill's 33, is owed $12 million in 2016. They wanted to get that money off the books. The interesting part of this is what they got back and the other piece that they gave up. Gene Segura struggled really last year in Milwaukee, hit .257 with a .281 on base percentage with 6 homers and 50 RBIs. He's a guy that can steal bases. He's going to play good defense. He's a little bit better than what they have currently in Nick Ahmed and Chris Owings, and they have Brandon Drury as well for their infield. So he's a little bit better than that. But moving this prospect, Diaz, is a little bit interesting. He's only 19, and in single A in 68 games, he hit .360 with a .436 on base percentage, 13 home runs, and 51 RBIs. And it's interesting to me that you give up on a guy who, at only age 19, had a really, really good year.
Well, they're not giving up on him. They just really wanted Gene Segura.
Which is a really odd thing to want.
It really is, isn't
it? Especially when you put it that he's really not that much better than what they currently had.
No, he's a replacement-level shortstop.
Now,
I mean, listen.
He's not even replacement-level.
Yeah, well, the last 3 years, here are his OPSs. 752, 614, 616. One of these things is not like the other, guys. And, he's just not good.
See,
period.
See, all right. And I get that the numbers say that he's not good, but...
And no, they scream it.
Well, right. And there's no numerical value that can be put on this. But I think a change of scenery is going to help him.
It's not going to somehow magically transform him into a great hitter, though. I mean,
no, but he's going to be...
I mean, he'll look better because he's in Arizona and it's easier to hit there. But he's not a good... He's not even close to an average offensive shortstop. He's not he's not an excellent defender. He's fine.
Nick Ahmed graded better than him last year at defense and offense.
Yeah, it's the acquisition of a name.
It's perplexing, to put it at least. I think from Milwaukee's perspective, though, they get a veteran starter that can help them in the process of their rebuild, and they get
Chase Anderson is perfectly fine.
Yeah,
he's
28.
He's nothing special, but
no, he can eat innings, and he can throw maybe 160 innings,
yeah,
or 75
competent.
Innings. You know,
he's very competent.
And for a team that's trying to rebuild, they need solid innings to to stay somewhat competitive, and he's going to help them do that.
Right.
I think.
And Diaz looks like a real interesting piece, like you were mentioning. And Aaron Hill can either platoon at second base with Scooter Gennett, or can maybe help play third base a little bit too, where I don't think the Brewers really have anybody of note.
See, for me, Hill is a very intriguing piece for the Brewers, because if he plays well for the first couple months of the year,
if he bounces back, that'd be
they're trading him in July
sure,
to a team that needs depth, and they're going to get something good back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 33-year-old bench, player that can play multiple positions, that can help a team push them over the top. There are teams that'll be willing to pay a pretty good price for that, and that could really help the Brewers.
The Brewers are making the kinds of moves that a rebuilding team
like the Rockies
to make. Yeah, pay attention, Colorado. They're acquiring pieces that have bounce back potential. They're acquiring young players with that are intriguing lottery tickets, and they're getting a completely palatable starting pitcher to throw into the rotation. And to do it, all they had to do was give up a shortstop that they didn't want and shouldn't want. Especially because they have Orlando Arcia, who's going to start the year at Nashville at AAA, and who will probably be up at some point during the year and be their starting shortstop for the next 6 years.
I was just going to mention that they had a shortstop prospect pretty much ready to play at some point this year, so moving Segura didn't
and
really
in,
hurt
And
them.
In the meantime, they replace him with Jonathan Villar, who's basically, I mean, he's not as good a defender, I don't think, as Segura is, but
he's going to give you the same offensive output, pretty much.
He's not appreciably worse.
No. So, I hate saying the teams win or lose trades because, you know, you can't really, in the moment you can kind of say who wins, but over the long term you don't know. The Brewers did well here.
Yeah, and I think they did well, and I don't understand anybody's wanting to acquire Gene Segura.
Yeah, I mean, they just wanted to get rid of Aaron Hill and his money, and I guess they took whatever deal that they could to get it done. I guess. I don't know.
I think the most concerning thing about this trade is it just kind of further peels back the mask that Stewart seems to have no idea what he's doing. I know that's harsh to say for a guy that is a GM. Obviously, he has to know a little bit what he's doing. But you know, he said he wouldn't sign Howie Kendrick because he didn't want to give up his compensation round pick. I believe it was before the second round. But then after trading Diaz away, the Diamondbacks have traded, this is from Keith Law, the D-backs have traded their first round pick from 2015, who's Dansby Swanson, first and fourth round picks from 2014, and second, third, and fourth round picks from 2013. So, you know, if the Diamondbacks were an organization that just fundamentally refused to give up draft picks, then that would make sense. But Dave Stewart seems to have no regard for them, and it's weird to see him try and upgrade his team by jettisoning prospects when, you know, a guy like Howie Kendrick is on the market for apparently $220, and you know that Howie Kendrick is a much better solution than Gene Segura. Obviously, they don't play the same position, but you could, you know, kick Chris Owings out of the starting role at second and have Kendrick play at the middle with Ahmed, which seems to be a much better solution.
I think this, I said it before the show, I think this opens the door for them to get Ian Desmond.
I hope it does, otherwise it
makes
no sense.
Well, honestly, where does Desmond go now? I mean, I thought the Diamondbacks were going to lean toward Kendrick, but now with him going back to the Dodgers, I guess Desmond's their only, you know, their only their option. So I think he's a good fit on a one-year deal. I understand the draft pick worry, but on a one-year deal, this is a guy that has pop in his bat. He did have a down year last year, but he very easily could rebound and give you solid production. And
he,
you know,
he didn't just have a down year last year, though. His offensive numbers have been dropping like a stone for three straight years.
He did play well after the All-Star break, though.
Yes. On a one-year flyer, if he plays well, and let's say none of this works out for the Diamondbacks and they're not in contention in June, July, they can move him and get something good back, just like the Brewers are going to do with Aaron Hill.
I can't see the Diamondbacks giving up that pick, though, for a one-year deal if they wouldn't do it for Kendrick for two. If they do, then Dave Stewart has absolutely no idea what he's doing.
Yeah. Okay. I think two would be the max I would go for Desmond. So, you know, I would be wary about anything over 2 years. I think, Mike, you agree with me on that, that 3 years is a little too much for him.
Well, you know,
I think that's potentially true, but you know, I wouldn't want to lock myself into Ian Desmond for 3 years, but it wouldn't surprise me if somebody does, to be honest.
Well, you know, the shortstop market next year isn't any good at all. I think there are four players coming off for free agency, and none of them are good. I can't tell you what it would be for 2017, 2018. But, you know, the Diamondbacks don't have anybody else coming up at second base or shortstop. You know, they traded Swanson, they traded Diaz, who, you know, would have been a few years away at best-case scenario, but it's not like the Diamondbacks would be blocking anyone by signing Desmond to a three-year deal, and then they'd be guaranteeing that they at least have someone that's serviceable there, while maybe they try and put together their farm system or get some money and save up for a shortstop that will be coming up in free agency a few years down the road.
All right, well, it'll be interesting to see. Matt, you have your story for us that you've picked out of nowhere to talk about this week.
Out of nowhere. Pretty sure.
Well, I forgot about it. I forgot. We do have an article on the site about it. I just forgot about it when coming up with topics for this week, and you reminded me. So.
So the news is that Andrew Jones is reportedly set to announce his retirement. And so I figured we could talk about him for a couple minutes because, I mean, he was one of the best players of baseball from 1998, or really 1997 to, looks like 2006. And then all of a sudden he just had this awful, awful collapse. And he went to the Dodgers and hit 158, 256, 249, and 238 plate appearances, and then bounced around to the Rangers, had a good year with the White Sox and the Yankees. But then 2012, he fell apart again. And I believe he went overseas to continue his career. And
Japan for 2 years.
Yeah, Japan. And it kind of looked like he was gearing up to try and come back. But for, you know, whatever reason, he just decided to hang it up. But, you know, he was on a Hall of Fame path for a while. And then just in 2007, it was like a flip, switch got flipped, and he just wasn't an above average hitter anymore. And, you know,
10 consecutive gold gloves in center field.
Yeah, I mean, he was the best, and then all of a sudden he wasn't anymore. It was one of the weirder things to watch. And, you know, so I was watching clips of him earlier today, and of course I watched his two homers and first two World Series at bats when he was still a 19-year-old. But I think my favorite was him scoring the winning run to knock Cuba out of the World Baseball Classic a few years ago, and send the Netherlands to the semifinal round in San Francisco during the 2013 round. And it was so cool to see him, you know. It wasn't a Major League Baseball moment, obviously, but he was so pumped, and the Netherlands to get to the semifinal round and beat Cuba was pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, he was hoping that a team was going to sign him for spring, but there are still some better options out there in terms of outfielders, so it seemed like a long shot, and he is probably going to hang it up. He's going to finish with 434 career home runs.
Hall of Famer?
No.
I think he could eventually get in there. I mean,
really?
I think it went from 15 years to 10, but he was so good for that 10, 11-year stretch.
Yeah.
And, you know, the gold gloves obviously help. He wasn't... His career WRC plus was 111. He had a slash line of 254, 337, 486. So that doesn't scream Hall of Fame, but with the gold gloves, the World Series, I think there's a chance that if he can, you know, stay on the ballot long enough, that he'll drum up enough support.
I'd be surprised if they voted in a career 254 hitter into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
that's the part for me that I think a lot of voters are going to struggle with.
And his collapse was so sudden; it wasn't like a gradual drop off where he was still pretty good. He just got awful.
I think he will stay on the ballot for a couple of years, though. He'll definitely get the needed percentages to stay on. I just don't think he's going to be able to trend the way some other guys, you know, tend to trend with the hall voting to get in.
Well, I think he could wind up getting, you know, completely underestimated. But you're talking about a guy who had over 60 WAR in his career. I mean, to me, he pretty clearly deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. As Matt pointed out, that 10-year stretch, he was. You know, he's the best center fielder in baseball from maybe 2000 to 2006. To me, he's a no-brainer to include, but that's taking into account some of the things that don't show up in his counting stats.
Anything we want to add this week, guys? A little bit of a short episode, not a ton going on, but. Anything? No?
Don't think so.
Nope.
All right, Mike, you know what time it is then.
Hey, guys. Do you like this podcast? You've listened this far, so
I was just
going to
say, if they listen this far, I think that's a yes.
You can find it at the bottom of any article that you read on MLBDailyDish.com, which is the site that all three of us write for. You can also go to Blog Talk Radio and find the Roster Rhetorical. You can go to iTunes and download us there. And if you do, hey, leave a comment. Rate us, please. Rate us highly. And if you are a weirdo with an Android phone, good for you. Go to whatever, you know, podcast emporium you tend to go to and download us there. 'Cause we do this once a week.
I have an Android. What are you saying, man?
It's just saying you're a weirdo.
All right. Well, thank you for that. But yeah, guys, really important that you subscribe to the show on iTunes or, you know, through whatever podcasting app you have. It's beneficial for both us and for you. You know when episodes drop. You know, sometimes we'll do 2 episodes in a week depending on what happens. Sometimes we're delayed with episodes based on some other stuff. So if you subscribe, you won't be left wondering if an episode is going to come out. When it comes out, you will know. And that's the important part. And make sure to tweet us questions. I haven't told the guys this, but next week I want to do a full-on Twitter question episode where we just mess around and talk about some random topics around baseball right before spring training starts and we start getting into analyzing some teams. So you can do that at MLB Daily Dish or at the three of us. Mike's at Mike Bates SBN. Matt is at The Original Bull, and I am at Chris R. Schubert. So just tweet us any random baseball question that you want answered. We'll bring them all together, and we will talk about them next week. Does that sound like a good plan, guys?
It sounds like a plan.
Yeah, well, it may be a bad one by the time we're done. Yeah, we'll see. It's a good point. All right, guys, thanks for joining us, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye.